It's your boy, Sean, joined by the man who will pop it, lock it, and put a chain on it, Steve OG.
I don't know what that means.
Thank you for leaning into the mic.
I wanted to make sure my point got across. Okay. That I'm clueless.
Okay. Join us as we open the Extreme Wrestling Archive, ECW, Enter the Sandman. Play music now. All right, so we got Enter the Sandman here. This took place May, I think it was 13th, 15th.
Of one, year of our Lord, 1995.
Yes. Why is that the year of our Lord?
All of the years of our Lord's years.
What, is that the year of the dragon? I don't know much.
Like a Mikey Whipwreck's shirt?
Of his shirt?
He had a dragon on his
shirt. Oh, did he? What the fuck do you remember that?
Because the whole shirt was dragon. He was wrapped in a dragon.
I think he loves dragons, because I think he was part of the Young Dragons. He wears a shirt dragon. I wonder if he has a dragon tattoo.
The boy with the dragon tattoo shirt.
All right, so we had 875 people in attendance. Why do you think attendance was so low?
That's weird, because I commented to myself. I said, self, there looks to be a lot more people in here than there usually is.
That is incorrect. Usually they pack them in 1,100.
But it seemed like they had bleachers.
Yeah, which...
they did not have before. They just had cement.
So maybe, cement. Yeah, so maybe somehow they made it look like there's more people than there was by adding...
bleachers.
Elevated seating.
And they had to have area to shove people because a lot of bleacher work occurred.
Yeah, there was a lot of bleacher brawling. What was last time? It was last week. I remember. Last
Hostile month, City Showdown.
Yeah, we had Hostile City Showdown. So your world champs going into this one are the Sandman, which is different, finally. Public Enemy are your tag champs. And Eddie Guerrero is your TV champion.
Television champion.
Yes. Although, they don't really... well, I guess they technically kind of defended on television, because they just rerun the pay-per-view on television of him defending the title. So, to begin things, we get Metallica's Enter Sandman, as we are shown like a graphic of the ECW arena. Well, actually it just says ECW arena in words. So it's text that says ECW arena, the date, and finally the show.
Can you explain words again to people and how those work?
How those, it's basically you put a bunch of letters together to make some kind of sound, and that sound is a word.
Do they use a serif or a sans serif font?
Probably a sans serif font. I believe it's serif.
I prefer serif. Like a sheriff of fonts.
All right, so any other thoughts on what happened last time? Do you remember what happened last time?
I do remember what happened last time, but I do not have any more thoughts than we talked about.
Okay, so nothing new. Not much really happened on television previously to this. The only thing is actually...
meanwhile, on ECW.
Yeah, it was basically the last month they just played clips of Hostile City Showdown. Although they did go back down into Florida this month and picked up a lot of viewers, and I think they had some beep guys wrestle down there too. There was actually a nice match between the Sandman and Cactus Jack, which we'll get into later. So we start off with Tony Stetson in the ring. So Stetson and then Hack Myers, he's kind of walking to the ring. His theme song is actually Dee Snider. I didn't realize that. That's kind of funny. What it was called, it was his band Widowmaker, not Twisted Sister.
Wow.
So it's kind of funny, actually, to begin. Stetson runs all the way the entire, like, he's trying to, like, Pearl Harbor him or jump him from behind, but he actually starts, like, way too far out. So he has to run around three ring posts to get behind Hack Myers to actually jump him from behind. So it was the longest attack from behind I've ever seen. He was really building up the suspense on that one. So he hits him at ringside. Stetson, he does work over Hack with his own ring gear. And, you know, Hack has that whole biker thing going on. So he's got a lot of studded leather.
That's what he has going on?
Yes, studded leather.
That's basic. It's a biker thing?
I don't know. I don't know much else about him. I don't think he held down a 9-to-5 job.
There's no way. There's no way he held down a 12-to-2 job.
Which was just lunch. All right. So, heck, he reverses a devastating mutton chop hold by Stetson with a kick to the groin. So, Tony Stetson was really grabbing hold of the mutton chops. Heck, he slips off the middle rope. He was trying to go for some middle rope maneuver. And sits on the ground.
And it did not work.
No, he slipped off. And you could see him motherfucking himself.
And not the first time during this show where there was some rope issues.
Yeah, do you think the ropes were like slippery? Or something? Extra slippery? They might have greased them down before. He does go up for a second time and does hit it this time, which was, I believe, a fist from the second rope. We get Shit and Shaw sing along with the crowd. So when Tony Stetson punches, they say Shit. When Hack Myers punches, they say Shaw. And back and forth. Pretty easy. Hack, he hits his patented leg drop with the opponent draped over the bottom rope. Hack, he then hits his finisher, the top rope, driving the face into the mat move. I couldn't find a name for it. So like he's on the top rope. The opponent's on the standing in the ring, and he just grabs him by the back of the head and shoves his head down into the mat. It's relatively weird. I don't see how it would work, but it worked for him. He got the 3 and the victory. What are your thoughts, Steve OG?
My comments were, why Hack Myers? That's what I wrote in my notes.
Why? You wrote notes?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I wrote, why Hack Myers?
As in, why, like, why?
Why do we keep doing this?
Oh, not as in, like, why, ? Hack Myers?
Also can
bring
it that way.
Oh, so you don't want to know why? Why Hack Myers? Why? You just want to know why?
I want to go why Hack Myers?
You don't like Hack Myers?
I do not.
Oh, do you like Tony Stetson?
I do not. I don't. I like neither one of them, and they keep coming back for more.
Okay. Well, this was not a tag team match. What are your thoughts on that to open the show?
I did enjoy that
up until 4 or 5 seconds in.
Right. Right. They did that. They did that just to screw with me. That's what I actually wrote that too.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Well, you want a non-tag team match? Well, we're going to give you the two most unpopular, unsanitary turds and put them together in a match. But this was a non-tag team match to get over Hack. But Tony Stetson actually had way too much offense for it to be like a getting someone over a match. Especially because Tony Stetson he's washed up.
This was like, more like a getting somebody nowhere match.
And neither of them got anywhere. And they prolonged it for a very long time. This was the slowest going nowhere I've seen, I think, in the opening match. So, any other thoughts, questions, queries on that?
No.
Okay.
Pass.
Quickly.
Pass.
All right. So next up, we got 911 and Taz with Paul Heyman coming out to face the Oriental Connection.
First off, Taz, extra greasy.
His hair? Or just
everything? He was glistening. All of his skin looked wet.
Did he have a
sheen? It looked like he just got out of the pool.
Did he have a sheen?
Yes. It looked like he had polyurethane in his body. Water would beat up off him if he walked out in a thunderstorm.
Just covered.
He was covered in Rain-X.
In lacquer?
Yeah.
All right, what about 911 or Paul Heyman? Anything with them?
Paul Heyman. Gross beard. Disgusting facial hair.
Yeah. Oriental Connection, anything on them?
Can't say that.
Okay.
Although the one guy looked like he was the mutant offspring of a tiger and Sting.
That was that Tsubo Genjin guy we saw last time. The other one, Hiroyoshi Ayakeda. That's a tough one to say. Don't ask me to say it again. Apparently, all I could find was he's wrestled 2 matches in his life. And one of them was this one.
Which lasted minutes. By the way, this was not a tag team match. I would classify this as a team versus tag match. Because it was 1-on-2.
The whole time.
Two lost.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I guess Taz and 911 were never in the ring together, but the Oriental Connection was always
constantly in there together.
Yes.
They literally were connected.
Yes. So Taz, he tells 911 his place to start off, which is on the floor. Taz, he starts the match with a pump handle slam on a Tiger Sting, as you call him.
Describe the pump handle.
The pump slam. Handle arm through the crotch, lifted in the air, slammed to the match. Picked up, slammed.
I workshopped a couple names for that.
The pump handle slam.
Better, better. Yeah. Okay. The grundle bomb.
You do get a lot of taint action.
The taint carry? Or the gooch slam?
All three. Various names for the perineum. My personal fave, I'm going to have to go with the gooch slam.
The gooch slam.
Subo, at this point, he hits that pump handle slam. He gets, a tag into Oriental Connection member two. But this is the point where there's no longer tagging in and out.
It's just two guys getting their asses kicked by one guy.
By one guy, yeah. Taz, he hits like a belly-to-belly on both at the same time.
Simultaneous belly-to-belly. Yeah. It was belly-to-belly-to-belly.
There was three
bellies. One belly on two bellies. One greasy belly. One shiny belly. Versus two
Asian bellies.
Yes.
There was a lot of tummy time going on there. Mm-hmm. So this actually gets a huge pop from the crowd. They did love it. 911, he comes in, does his double choke slam.
What's better than one choke slam? Two choke slams.
That's correct.
But did you see how the double choke slam worked?
No.
It was just the other two guys just jumping into the air, necks out to get touched by hands, and then they just fell to the ground.
Yeah,
there was no choking nor slamming. It was just two guys jumping and high fiving their necks against the hand.
It was basically 911, like using the force, like
yeah,
or the Schwartz.
Yeah.
So then he hits 911. That is, he hits a double single choke slam on each. So one at a time. He must have been tired after that. We then get an extreme instant replay of the match, which was basically the entire match all over again. Right. Background by the song Immortal Sin from Fight. Are you familiar with that band?
Pass.
Although the lead singer of Fight was also the lead singer of Judas Priest.
Look at that.
Anything on that match, or squash, or whatever you want to call it.
Or, like, assault.
It was basically like warming up to the, like when you do the 5 minutes on the treadmill at the gym to start. That's basically what that was.
Right.
The warm up. Yeah. So the only positive for me is that they didn't start with this match for you.
Thank you.
So they, what would you have rather had this match first, or were you happy with this match being second and the other one being
first? I was happy with this match being second because a tag match should never start.
Okay. Next up, we hear Come Out and Play as Raven and Stevie hit the ring. Again, we'll be mentioning him a lot this month, Stevie. Douglas, he then comes out, sticking his nose in the business. And he introduces the troubleshooting referee, Bill Alfonso. A debut that will change the course of ECW forever. And also probably raise stock in whistles.
Tweet!
Yes. Bill Alfonso, he's introduced as a troubleshooting referee. And it is a big heat magnet in ECW, as there basically are no rules.
And he's here to enforce the rules.
The rules,
like
yes.
Like PA.
And he commission. threatened to shut down the company, the whole organization, if rules are not followed to a T. But Todd Gordon then comes out, and Fonzie, he hilariously says he doesn't know who he is, which Todd Gordon, who runs the company at the time. He is assigned by this PA Sports Commission, is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
As you said. And he's here to enforce the rules. So,
I think
a rule enforcing referee.
I think the most important part of that is that at one time in that ring, you had these pieces of 90s fashion represented. You had a man in a bow tie. You had a man with a perm mullet, jean shorts, and a belly shirt. you had another man wearing tasseled shoes.
Who had tasseled shoes? Oh, Todd Gordon, probably.
No, it was Shane Douglas. He had tasseled shoes.
Oh, oh. Todd.
You had a man in a tuxedo with a red cummerbund. another man in a suit, a man with a dragon t-shirt, and a man with purple bike shorts. All in one ring at the same time.
Yeah. All you needed was like acid wash jeans. And
you'd be sad.
You'd hit every year of that decade. All right. So Bill Alfonso, he's actually a referee from the WWF previously. And you can even see he shows up in his WWF uniform, which was black slacks and like a light blue shirt.
With a bow tie.
Yeah. As opposed to, I think it was John Finnegan in the ring who had black slacks, but the white and black stripes.
Stripes, yeah. If you will.
The slimming. So, yeah, he could still see the remnants of WWF on him. So, Man in the Box, it hits as Tommy Dreamer and Mikey Whipwreck come out to the ring. Dreamer, I noticed at this point, I had asked you last time, he is still announced as being from Dreamland, USA. Which isn't very hardcore, even though they chant he's hardcore.
He did.
Right after that.
Yeah.
Dreamer, Richards, they started out, but Dreamer obviously wants Raven.
So he eschews himself.
He tags in Mikey.
He says, pass.
Yeah. He passes on the first round. Dreamer, he then sneakily tags himself in on Mikey as Raven and, or excuse me, Richards and Dreamer are wrestling in there, but then he not so sneakily just dumps Raven. I keep saying Raven. Just not so sneakily dumps Richards to the outside. And then Dreamer, he attempts to go out and like get Richards, you know, or attack him on the outside. And Bill Alfonso just like holds him back.
And with no part of it.
Yeah, he's holding Dreamer back. And that's hilarious because it's like a 250-pound man being held back by 100.
With a bow tie.
Man with a bow tie. That weighs 130 pounds. What else we got here? So Dreamer, he reverses Richards on an Irish whip and reverses it into a DDT. But he still clearly wants Raven, so he tags back in Mikey. Or wait, no. He clearly still wants Raven and goes towards him. And this is when Mikey and Alfonso actually hold him back. Which is hilarious because now you have 230-pound men. With bow ties. Although, no, he doesn't have a bow tie.
He's a dragon t-shirt.
You have a bow tie and a dragon t-shirt holding him back. All right, so we get some nice double teaming by Dreamer and Mikey. They do some tag team tandem offense. Richards, again, misses a drop kick and hurts himself. How is that painful?
Because he's not good.
he's expecting that like recoil and it's just not happening. And he's bracing himself for that, not bracing himself for just falling to the mat. That's why he's so hurt. So finally, we get a tag into Raven after Richards turns the table. So Raven, he clearly is bigger than Mikey, overpowers him, but he no-sells a Hurricane Rana, which is a devastating move. No-sells it, tackles Mikey to the mat, starts punching him. Raven, he again no-sells another flying head scissors, and then re-tags in Stevie. So Raven looking pretty powerful here. Hulk Hogan-like. No selling maneuvers. Richards, he hits a very nice powerbomb on Mikey. Raven and Stevie, they do some tag team tandem offense themselves. Raven, he almost slams Mikey to the floor from the top turnbuckle. Dreamer.
Catches him.
Makes sure that doesn't happen. Makes the save, if you will. Raven, he then hits a swinging neck breaker, no problem, on Mikey. Then he goes for a second one, but Mikey holds the rope. Raven, much like Richards earlier, misses the swinging neck breaker and hurts himself as opposed to not hurting himself when he hit it. What's the logic on that one?
Don't know.
How could you're not expecting any kind of recoil or anything.
I know. I don't get it.
It's a tough one. We'll have to do some research. Well, I'll have to do some
physics.
All right, so Mikey, he misses a dive to the outside on Richards, but Dreamer does hit it, which was pretty sweet, actually, because Dreamer's like twice the size Mikey. Then in a really cool spot, Raven, he hits a DDT on Mikey. while Dreamer hits one on Richards as they're like almost looking at each other. It's like a mirror image kind of thing.
Spider-Man meme?
Is it a Spider-Man meme?
Yeah, the Spider-Man meme. Mm-mm. The Spider-Man meme? Come on, yes. Where there's three Spider-Men looking at each other?
Mm-mm. I'm not familiar. Like the most famous
meme in the world.
Nah, I don't know. Maybe if I saw it, I would know.
It's three cartoon Spider-Men staring at each other.
And does it say anything?
No.
No. I'll have to look it up. All right, so Raven and Dreamer, they finally do collide on the inside as Dreamer unloads with some closed right hands, ignoring referee Bill Alfonso's authority, who's warning him about the closed fist. And on the third punch, Alfonso calls for the bell and disqualifies Dreamer.
Closed fist.
In Extreme Championship Wrestling.
That's it.
Post-match, Douglas sticks his nose in the business again, telling Dreamer to go ahead and hit Alfonso, because, you know, Dreamer's winding up to hit him because he's pissed off. But if Alfonso gets hit, the company shuts down. So now that Shane Douglas has lost the title, he doesn't care about the company anymore. Trying to get Tommy Dreamer to hit Bill Alfonso. Cactus comes out after that, basically tells Shane Douglas to fuck off. Nobody wants you here.
Go home.
Take your ball and leave. Jack Douglas get into a little scuffle. That ends that segment of the match. What are your thoughts on that?
When Mikey Whipwreck and Raven were in the ring together, right? It reminded me, are you familiar with the blockbuster movie from the 80s, Indiana Jones?
Which one?
The first one.
Yes.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know the scene where they're in the desert and the guy is going to fight Indiana Jones and that's the swords and he's like,
yeah.
Crazy over the swords, and then Indiana Jones just pulls a gun out and shoots him.
Yes.
That's what this was. Like, Mikey Whipwreck, like, he's attempting, like, Hurricane Ranas and all these technical moves, whatever, and then Raven just walks over and just, like, throws his face into the net. Like, four times.
It basically takes out a gun and shoots him.
Yes.
So, yeah, Mikey Whipwreck doing all this flashy
And the stuff. Raven just walks up and says, I'm just going to throw your face into the ground hard.
Yeah, Mikey bringing a stick to a gunfight, basically.
Yeah.
All right, so this match, for me, was fun to watch. Really garnered some heat for Bill Alfonso, the troubleshooting referee, which is an awesome antagonist in ECW at the time, especially because he's coming from WWF, much like Doink the Clown previously.
He represents
WWF.
The man.
Yeah. Of course, Dreamer just can't get the upper hand on Raven, so that'll help keep this feud going. Basically, I guess everyone looked good. I didn't really see anything too bad. Any botches, any major things you noticed?
No.
Continuing, this feud is still, like, in the beginning, though. Like, compared to how long it goes, even though it's been, like, two or three shows, like, big shows.
Building it slow.
Yeah, it's a slow burn. All right, so next up we have the TV title match. Eddie versus Malenko. Eddie Guerrero versus Dean Malenko.
Edward Guerrero.
Yes. So this is a rematch from last month, which went to a time limit draw. So, the champ, Eddie, already in the ring. Boo, I have. Perfect Strangers hits, which is actually Shane Douglas's music, but...
Not the theme song for the TV show.
No, correct, yeah.
Which is the best song ever.
This is the Deep Purple version. Dean Malenko comes out to it. He's in the Triple Threat, so that's why I guess he comes out to it. I don't even know if he had his own music. I think on your version, though, he came out to his WCW theme.
You couldn't hear anything.
Oh, I thought, like, on the network version, I know he comes out to his WCW theme.
The volume of the music on my versions would be the equivalent of, like, if someone in the crowd was playing music on their phone.
Oh, is that why you mentioned that earlier? So, on commentary, Joey, he introduces Peter Sinercha, lists all his credentials, including a second Dan in judo. Are you familiar with that?
I am not.
I don't even know what a Dan is. I know who, like, I know a couple Dans, but...
A Dan?
I don't think any of them know judo. All right, so we will judo? See and hear more about him. I put earlier. We will see and hear more about him later. How did I mix those up? I did tell you about him many, many episodes ago. When he first debuted, because we've seen him before. All right, so for me, I just had like this match is going to be very similar to last month's,
but yet it seemed very slow.
Yeah,
but I guess if you're gonna have a 30 minute match, you can't go out guns blazing.
Yeah, it was clipped.
Yeah,
a little bit. So I would really just want to call out some of the like major differences. For instance, like I said, the match is clipped. Malenko, he hits a tombstone pile driver. Look pretty sweet on Eddie. They actually do go to the outside, and Eddie hits like a crossbody all the way down the entranceway. Cool. It was pretty sweet. Joey, he does get it right and calls it a frog splash this month. I think last month it was an undescribable splash. So he did his homework. Eddie, he hits a super duper plex, I called it, because they were both standing on the top rope, which is a long way down.
That was vicious, too.
Yeah. So Eddie, he again has a mishap. As you were saying, the slippery ropes. He has, but even last month he missed his like walk up the rope into a head scissor move. This time, I think he bonked his head off of Dean Malenko's head because he busted open. So, and you could see him like hold his head real quick. So like
he was like, owie.
Yeah, he got a real. He got a legit owie on that. So that's 2 months in a row. Needs to be careful with that move. He hasn't quite perfected it yet. Eddie, he does hit a top rope Frankensteiner and a sit-down razor's edge, I have, which were pretty high intense moves, which were just clipped too as we go along. Only got a two count though. And then finally, the bell rings amidst a figure four, and we again have a time limit draw. So there's a lot of hold, counter hold, crisp mat wrestling like there was last week, but we saw it last month. So for me, I don't want to like demean their wrestling ability and everything, but I mean, Dean Malenko has absolutely zero charisma and he is not a good mic worker.
Zero.
And Eddie, at this point, he did cut an interview previous to this with some fire into it, but it wasn't that great. So I don't want to take anything away from their hard work and wrestling abilities, but I do like the theatrics and some promo and even some charisma in the ring. You can do that as well.
But all the other matches on this card had a lot of that. So
yeah, that is true.
You couldn't have that the whole way through.
Give me something.
A little something.
So Joey, he then introduces us to this Peter Sinercha, who is actually Taz with Paul Heyman. So I did mention his name when we debuted him, what was it, back in 93. And then we just get a montage of suplexes. What? That's all it was.
It was just funny.
It was just a montage, like Rocky. So then Enter Sandman plays as Sandy, as I like to call him, on a nickname basis.
Okay.
Comes out, and there's a sign that says, "I wish the Sandman was my dad." Was that the one that was blurred out?
I don't know. It was blurred out.
Oh. Was it blurred out during this match?
I don't remember.
Oh.
The place went crazy, though, when he walked out, though.
Yeah. Like, he's definitely getting his entrance down, because it was about a four-minute entrance with many photo opportunities.
And he's just holding that kendo stick like it's the Olympic torch.
That's all he got. He'll never get an Olympic-type metal torch. No. Anything. Maybe, probably not even an Olympic ticket. They wouldn't let him in. I don't think you can drink. But yeah, there you can see there's many photo opportunities where they hold a position for a minute for flash photography. And then I have written, again, the champion comes out first. So, Born to be Wild kicks as a Cactus kind of hobbles to the ring. But he's attacked before he gets into the ring yet again. I think that happened
every time he wrestles.
Yeah, but it also happened multiple matches this card, too. Tony Statson did it, yeah. And Ian Rotten.
So. That's right.
All right, so this match, I don't know why the stipulation was, but the winner is to face Shane Douglas after this, which was promoted before. I'm guessing just because they both feel like they deserve a title shot.
So the winner of this has to face the number two contender.
Yeah, like, I feel like, wouldn't you feel
if
like...
If you win the title, You get to face the number two contender.
Wouldn't you have Cactus and Shane face each other for a shot at an the opportunity champion? Like the champion has no advantage here.
Right.
The champion's at a disadvantage.
It's like a reverse tournament.
So he comes out first. He's not introduced second.
And now he has to wrestle everybody.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. There is no advantage to being a champion. You might as well be the second ranked wrestler.
The unchampion.
Yeah, you should be the second ranked challenger.
The first because
you even go yeah you even second, go, second you even go up. Second you're even in the second match, so both of them have already wrestled. Mm-hmm. So no matter who wins, they're both going to be tired.
Right.
So seed number two, or I guess would it be seed three?
You want the third seed.
Has the best advantage.
Right. So. The third seed only has to wrestle once, and you get to face a tired
team. Makes absolutely
You get a bye.
The champions in the first round. And the second runner-up gets a bye. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. fucking hilarious.
Yep.
All right, so this is actually a rematch I was talking about earlier from Florida where they had a good match, which I believe was false count anyway. So it was on the previous episode of Hardcore TV before this. As we said, Sandman, he attacks Cactus before he comes out, and we start everything on the outside of the ring. So Cactus, he hits like a running cannonball into the Sandman into the first row, which was looked like it was painful, but he basically just dove at him. They brawl up the bleachers. Some more bleacher action for you. As a woman at the top, you can see her. She actually, either she jumps or she falls off the back of this.
Oh, man.
I didn't see that. Oh, you didn't see that. She falls off the back of the bleachers there. Or she's like, fuck this, and jumped out of the way. That made me laugh. So both trade shots with Steel Dragon. So that's making a... And it was steel. I did check these ones. No plastic. Cactus, he fails with a chair and opts to use the fans' chairs. Why do I have that?
I don't know, but the fans in this one just kept handing weapons. Like, there was a guy in the stands who just happened to have a cookie sheet. And he just handed the cookie sheet to Cactus, and he hits him with it.
Yeah.
And then he gives them the cookie sheet back.
Oh, that's nice.
And then he started to walk away, and he's like, you know what? Hold on a minute. He tells the guy to kind of hold up the cookie sheet. And then it looked like the plan was for him to throw Sandman's face into the cookie sheet. But if you watch it, Sandman just, on his own volition, just runs headfirst into the cookie sheet, unfazed, then turns around, and then politely gets back into the ring.
I think they he didn't.
Also, somebody slid him a bowling pin.
A bowling pin. I saw that. I have what the fuck, or I actually have fuck that. Do you know what a bowling pin is made of? That is a murder weapon. Like
it's
I'd rather
blunt,
get
a blunt object.
I'd rather get hit with a chair wrapped in barbed wire, a plastic chair. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a lot of fan participation in here, holding up chairs, Cactus ramming Sandman's head into it. Yeah, someone slides him a bowling pin. Fuck that.
It was like a slick slide, too. Yeah. Just like, whoop, there it is.
Sandy, he hits some actual wrestling moves on the inside. Jack reverses the momentum, hits a swinging neck breaker, but misses his trademark Cactus clothesline. And Sandman just dumps him to the outside. Sandman, he jumps from the apron into Cactus's direction, but I cannot tell whether or not he hit the move, even though the camera was right on him.
Yeah.
So he's trying to jump from the apron over the guardrail. He didn't quite make it. I don't know if Cactus was supposed to move, what happened, but the Sandman looked like it hurt. But he got a big pop and raised his fist to the crowd. So whatever
I think
it was.
I think he clipped a rope, too.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
Whatever that was supposed to be, it got over.
It looked like he clipped a rope and messed up his momentum. All
right. So back inside, we get a semi-sloppy pile driver by the Sandman. We get a table in the ring, which Cactus ends up doing some like teeter-totter shit and flips the Sandman over the top rope directly on his head. There was no break in that fall.
It was fancy.
Yeah, that got a big pop from the crowd. It was actually kind of awesome. That had to have hurt. Legit.
Yeah.
Joey gives us a big, oh my god, the biggest one of the night. Some broad comes out and throws a bucket of barbed wire into the ring. Did you notice who it was?
No.
Me neither. Some ring rat, as they say. Cactus, he then wraps his arm in the barbed wire, hits a diving elbow to the floor. It was a real nice spot. Looked sweet. Sandman busted open. Cactus then delivers three barbed wire elbows in the ring, followed by the double arm DDT, but he only gets a two count as Shane Douglas had come out and put the Sandman's leg on the rope. So Cactus Jack and Douglas exchange verbiage.
Voibs.
And Sandy hits a Singapore cane shot to the dick and steals the victory. Mm. What were your thoughts on that match?
I was so happy to see Cactus Jack in a match, not with Terry Funk. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
To watch that.
You were rather entertained.
Yes, I was entertained.
I have, these two are not Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero in the ring.
None at all.
But I was more entertained by this match. Which just goes to show that in the great book of Shun, theatrics
matter.
Yeah, theatrics, promos, and character will get you further than just pure mat wrestling.
And which book is this? Where can I pick this up at?
Barnes & Noble.
Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. Only. Exclusive. And it's only parking lot. It's only in paperback.
In the parking lot.
Yes. No digital releases. So, yeah. Held my interests and also the ending. It was kind of sloppy or whatever, but it'll make sense later. Any other thoughts
in the near future?
In the very near future.
No.
Nothing. All right. Next up, we have Marty Jannetty versus Eddie Guerrero for the TV title.
And originally, this was supposed to be Chris Benoit.
Yeah. It was marketed as a special attraction match, which I am not attracted to that match whatsoever. So this match must have been terrible, as it wasn't even put on the home video. So
right. They erased it from existence.
Yeah. There is less footage of this than the George Wendt show.
Right.
I guess the reason Benoit was not there.
His wife was in a car accident.
Yeah, that is correct. So this was back when he had a human heart.
Oof. And a wife.
And but also, you know what's weird is Nancy Sullivan was at this show too. Ugh. Whom he would later
slaughter.
Marry and slaughter, basically. He was attending to his family at the time. So Benoit did not make it.
So Guerrero just wrestled twice.
Yeah. Which I was kind of surprised they had Eddie wrestle because he like busted his head open.
Earlier. And wrestled a 30-minute match.
Yeah.
11 minutes before.
Yeah. I'm sure you had some jobber back there. Fucking Chad Austin or somebody.
Couldn't have, you could have brought, yeah, somebody. You could have brought out
Joel Hartgood with the back tattoo of land.
I mean, or, like 911 Taz each wrestled 30 seconds apiece.
Yeah. Yeah, like, yeah, throw Taz out there with them. At least it didn't make it to the tape. We didn't have to watch it or suffer through it, so thank you.
So we get more Sandman.
Yes. So, although this was scheduled beforehand.
Right.
And it wasn't back-to-back, so, although it seems like it on the tape. So we cut to Sandman in the ring again.
Because what's the best thing that you can do is have a title match be the next-to-last match in your career.
It was the next-to-last and the next to next to last.
Right.
All right.
That is correct.
Yeah. So we cut to the Sandman in the ring. Douglas on the outside making his entrance. Shane is dead chance as well as we want Flair. Douglas, he gains the upper hand to begin. Rams Sandman's head into an exposed turnbuckle. Which is unusual because he was the one that exposed it. Based on turnbuckle
etiquette
logic. An etiquette is supposed to be used against you, and it was not.
No, I'm pretty sure that like that's a theorem now.
They teach that
the geometry. Turnbuckle theorem. Yeah. If you expose a turnbuckle, you are going to be hurt by said turnbuckle.
Yeah. I seem to remember like Einstein or Newton, right?
Mm-hmm. It's his 15th law. It was on the back.
Yeah. Shane, he like tries to dump Sandman on the turnbuckle, or not the turnbuckle, so he tried to dump Sandman on the ropes, but like the Sandman falls out, takes another nasty bump on the top of his head. So that's like two tonight. He's kind of been knocked silly. Douglas, he hits a tope, which is a dive over the top rope to the Sandman on, or excuse me, to the outside on the Sandman, which was actually very, very nice. I don't compliment Shane Douglas that often, but I was impressed with that. So this actually turned into a very, very slow match, which I think is probably because the Sandman was very, very tired.
He wrestled 11 minutes before.
Yeah. Douglas, he hits a springboard splash on the Sandman, which again surprised me. I couldn't believe he's doing all these. And actually a top rope crossbody as well. So Sandman, he finally dumps Douglas to the outside after trying two times before. So the third time was a charm. He finally got him out of the ring. And then he whips Shane into the corner, and Shane does vintage Ric Flair, like when he gets whipped into the turnbuckle, flips over the top rope, and then runs back, gets clotheslined. Ric Flair did that 20 years before this.
That was the time.
Which is, I just don't get, Shane Douglas complains constantly about Ric Flair, but copies him.
All of his shtick.
Yeah, so I guess he's just jealous. Sandman, he, on the outside, drops a table, basically, onto Douglas. Looks like he almost suplexes the table onto Douglas, who is on a stack of tables. So he's, like, in a table sandwich. Slingshot senton by Sandman flattens Douglas. He lands right on his head. That looked painful.
Mm-hmm.
Shane, he goes for the belly-to-belly, but the Sandman reverses it. And Sandman gets a cover, but Shane puts his foot on the rope. But, Cactus was there.
Push it off. Scoops the foot off. One, ha two, ha three.
Yes. The exact opposite of what
three.
The exact opposite of what we just saw in the last match. At this point, post-match, Fonzie comes out, says that since Cactus Jack interfered, the match must continue. Where was Fonzie in the last match? I don't get it. It's bullcrap. It's not fair.
Wow.
Sandman, he was about to cane Bill Alfonso and possibly get the company shut down.
Then he stopped.
But no, he didn't stop. Cactus Jack rushed in and took the cane swing, I guess. What is that? The cane damage? The cane hit?
It's a hit.
The cane hit?
Yeah.
The cane swing? He takes the cane hit in order to save the company. Shane, he then rolls up Sandman as Fonzie counts to three. And the two refs begin to argue as Sandman leaves with the belt.
It might be a strike.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Cane strike.
A cane strike.
Yeah.
Douglas and Jack, they argue as well. And then Malenko comes in, works over Cactus Jack until Dreamer makes the save. In turn, prompting Stevie and Raven to come out with the front of a fan covering. A large fan, an industrial size fan. And we end up getting an even flow DDT from Raven on Dreamer onto the fan covering. What were your thoughts on this match?
He was tired. He was tired, man.
The same, man.
Yeah.
They kind of stitched him up real quickly or whatever, put tape over his head. He started
probably
getting
some Gatorade.
Also, he's probably drank.
Patted him on the ass and get back out there.
He's probably drunk at this point, too.
Also true. Something in that game.
Yeah. For me, there is so much storyline in this matchup. You got Cactus and Shane not letting each other win between the two matches. And who is the champ now? As Fonzie counted the three. And he's a troubleshooting referee.
Who's in charge?
Yeah.
Is it the ref? Is it Gordon?
Is it Charles?
In charge.
So who's the champ? Then you got Raven and Dreamer. Why not? Although, I guess they really didn't have a... Well, I guess Dreamer and the Sandman kind of have a history. When he was getting the wax, the 10 wax with the cane, and he was the one that originally blinded the Sandman last year in November to remember. Or no, it wasn't last year.
You forgot the November to remember?
Yeah. No, he did it last year sometime during the summer, and the Sandman retired at the November to remember, but then pretend like took
you,
all his stuff.
Are you sure? Do you remember?
I think I'm
pretty
sure.
You should.
I need to write these November to remembers down because I just can't
remember. Remember. The 5th of November.
All right. You also have Fonzie screwing over all of the faces, which is just wonderful. Getting a lot of heat from the crowd. Douglas, he pulled out all the stops in this match, doing a lot of high-risk maneuvers, which, like I said, I'm not a big complimenter of Douglas, but he was trying with...
To get signed.
That's true. Well, no, like I told you last time, according to him, Vince was schmoozing him at this point. At this point, Douglas is still working a 9-to-5 as a teacher in school. So he only has to work on, like, the weekends, which is fine with him or whatever. Yeah. But if he goes to the WWF, you know,
365.
That's a full schedule. So the money had to be right and the time had to be right. He had to leave his wife. Now, because he had previously been in the WWF and the WCW, so he knows those touring schedules. So, yeah, he didn't want to leave his job. He was making, like, more money not going anywhere, and he was home during the week. So that's why he's teasing this WWF thing, but he hasn't actually left yet. So I don't think I have anything left. Do you have anything left with that match?
I do not.
A lot of story going on there.
Lots of story.
Shenanigans.
And now we get a tag match.
Why not?
But an awesome tag match.
That is correct. So we get, here comes the Hot Stepper. Hits as the Public Enemies come out.
And the crowd goes wild.
They do.
They go wild.
So we are 4-for-4 here. And champs coming out first. There's only 3 belts. And somehow 4 times the champion was the first one to the ring.
It's extreme.
It's infuriating me.
It's extreme.
All right. So champs are out first. Then Thunder Kiss 65 by White Zombie hits as the Pitbulls come in. With who?
Stevie Richards.
That is correct.
So, stipulation. 2 stipulations in this match.
There is. Do you think, before we get to that, do you think Stevie was getting paid per appearance on the card?
Yes.
Was he getting commission?
He got a producing credit each time it's a featuring.
Enter the Sandman featuring.
He's the Barry Gordy of ECW.
Enter the Sandman featuring Stevie Richards.
Yeah, right. I'm telling you, he's Lil Jon of the early 2000s. Yeah.
All right. Like you said, 2 stipulations in this match. Can you go over that?
We have a double dog collar match.
Can you explain that?
So, 2 teams of 2. One person from one tag team is dog collared to another person, said dog collar, with a chain in the middle.
The other team.
Yes, from the other team. Yeah. So, you are paired with a chain with the person of your not choosing.
Very good.
Second stipulation, if the Public Enemies win, they get 5 minutes alone. Stevie Richards. It's like 7 minutes in heaven.
That's what I was kind of wondering. Does it state where this 5 minutes is?
No, alone.
It can be 5 minutes alone anywhere?
Anywhere.
Alright, so... Alright, very good. So, like you said, double dog collar. Pitbull 1 is chained to Johnny Grunge, and Pitbull 2 is chained to Rocco Ruck. So that's your paired off there. So we get your typical how every chain strap, anything with a length in it starts, and that's with the tug of war.
Very common. Required by the Pennsylvania Game Commission.
Yes. It is
Gaming Commission.
It is written in pen in the script for every...
John Hancock actually signed that.
P1 I have, which is Pitbull 1, short for Pitbull 1. He's hung up to dry to start.
Why was he wet?
Did you see how greasy he was?
Okay.
So, attempted murder 10 seconds into this match. A lot of chain choking and chain whipping. Pitbull 1, Johnny Grunge, they're the first ones to go to the outside, which is surprising. I thought they'd both immediately go to the outside, but only Grunge and... Rocco Rock and Pitbull 2 did stay in the ring for a little bit. Pitbull 2, he hits a powerbomb on Rocco Rock very early. So we're going to have to go up from here, from the powerbomb to start the match. But only gets a 2 count. So both teams brawling on the outside. And I have here, the Steel Dragon is out. Which there's multiple out.
Blooming.
Yeah.
It's a squadron of dragons. Is it a squadron? Squadron of Dragons?
A Flight?
It's a Murder of Crows.
No one forgets that one.
A Murder of Dragons.
A Murder of Dragons. It should be a Murder of Dragons. Yeah. At some point, I noticed Rocco Rock was wielding a rolling pin. So that's a new kitchen instrument.
Baking a cake. Fast as you can.
Yeah. He did not play patty cake, though. I did not see. Pitbull 2, he goes into the ring post, and then he gets hit with a frying pan. So I think we've made it to the kitchen part of the show.
Evening.
Yeah, we had the bowling pins and what have you, the cookie sheets. So, and then he clearly blades on camera. You can see him cutting it up. Grunge, he hits.
I thought he was shaving.
Yeah, up here?
Yeah, eyebrows.
Yeah. Grunge, he hits a Vader bomb on Pitbull 1 on the other side of the ring through a table,
mm-hmm.
which was... barely saw because of the hard camera.
Yeah.
All the fans were on their feet, though.
They weren't going to be able to fix that table.
Yeah, so.
That's a shame. It was a nice table.
Yeah. Richards, he then ends up propping a table on the corner turnbuckle, which Pitbull 2 and Rocco Rock get on top of, which is very unstable. Made me nervous. But Pitbull 2 ends up hitting a power slam off that. So it's basically like a shelf on the top rope, and he almost slipped off of it, but he did hit him with a power slam. But then we cut to Johnny Grunge, who is busted open, as is Pitbull 1 at this point. Rocco Rock then somewhere gets jumper cables and walks them onto Pitbull 2's balls. Fortunately, there's no, I didn't see a battery around, so there's
there was
no kind of...
There was no electrical source.
Yeah, there was no kind of source. And then Rocco Rock hits an awesome moonsault onto Pitbull 2 through a table. That was sweet. Like I said, we got to start escalating here. Last match, you already busted out like the big moves, the power bombs, the Vader bomb through the table. And then we get some fuck Sabu chants. And I have, that's not very nice.
Poor language.
It's,
what, like did I said, what did Sabu ever do to you?
Well, they say, like, they publicly fired Sabu on the last card because he was working in Japan. He decided to work at Japan that night because he was getting paid way more money there.
Right.
And he was sneaking off to do these ECW shows. And he couldn't make it. So he wanted to go where he was going to get paid. And which I can't blame him for. Because apparently like money and shelter and stuff. Or money. Food and shelter cost money.
Maslow's hierarchy.
Yes, that is, I believe, the lowest one.
Philadelphia's not on there. This is not one of the needs.
I feel like your lowest needs are food and shelter and drink, which you can get for free, actually, in the ocean. All right, so Pitbull 2, Rocco Rock, they brawl to the broadcast position. Another tug of war leads to a somersault plancha by Rock onto Pitbull 2, which looked pretty sweet, but I don't think that was what Rocco Rock wanted intentionally, as you can see. So grabs a couple more steel dragons as... I think Pitbull 2 sets up a table on the broadcast position, the lower level. Mm-hmm. There's like two levels. So again, Rocco Rock starts going to the top. Again, they start tugging of war. But this time Pitbull 2 hits a fucking awesome suplex on suplexes Rocco Rock through the table from the top broadcast booth. It was an amazing spot. I loved it.
It was really, really good.
Yeah. And the camera was right there too, mm-hmm. so it was nice and clear, which was wonderful. So then I noticed T-Rex, the dinosaur, made another appearance, as I think Stevie Richards had it.
He was they probably just put it on
his bedtime toys
mm-hmm.
and his race car bed. All four men, clearly bloody at this point, and also clearly exhausted as fuck at this point. Pitbull 2, he sets up a table in the ring, and the Pitbulls hit the incredible super bomb through a table in a super awesome spot. So the Super Bomb is their finisher, but Johnny Grunge does break up the pin. Pitbulls, then they accidentally hit Stevie with a chain, and he goes through a table. So it's important everyone get in table. The only one left is the ref. At this point, all four men's chains are basically
just
fucking
entangled. Yeah, just a knot.
You need like a Boy Scout out there to get those knots out. So they end up with a superplex on Grunge, but Rocco Rock reverses. So the two that are chained, which is Grunge and Pitbull 1. Pitbull 1 superplexes Grunge onto the ground as Rocco Rock was trying to be well, not trying to be, but Rocco Rock was about to be belly to back suplex by Pitbull 2 on the other side of the ring, but turns it into a crossbody splash type thing. Mm-hmm. So you have Grunge down on the one side, Pitbull 2 down on the other side. Both men get pinned as I believe it's John Finnegan makes a three count simultaneously. So it looks like both men get pinned, both teams get pinned at the same time. So the Pitbulls, I believe Stevie gives them the belts. They're holding them in the air, but Bob Ortiz announces that the Public Enemies are still the champs and the winners.
The winners.
With the old, what is that called? The swerve, like, announcing? Your winners and still champs. Which I always love. So, at this point, the Public Enemies get five minutes. With Stevie at any place they want. It's just not disclosed in a certain venue or place. So the Public Enemy, though, they are way too exhausted at this point. So they get worked over by Stevie, and he claims that he gets the 5 minutes. But he's just going to take that 5 minutes in the ring.
Right.
I assumed maybe they'd go somewhere else.
More romantic or something. Yeah.
Like maybe Geno's or Pat's getting a cheesesteak.
Right.
But Public Enemies eventually get a double clothesline in, turn the tables, and they end up going for the drive-by, which is a reverse DDT by Grunge and a senton splash by Rocco Rock, but Raven interferes.
And then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah. So if you thought there was a hell, lot of...
the ground opened up and then hell came out.
Yeah.
Loose.
And what did you say? A devil...
There's Angel of Death and a devil of life.
They all were there.
Yeah.
All right. So Stevie, at this point, Pitbulls are holding up each of the Public Enemies. Stevie hits a Stevie kick on them. But Tommy Dreamer finally comes in, cracks Stevie with a steel dragon. But Stevie ends up somehow recovering quickly, hits Tommy Dreamer with a steel dragon. Him and Raven work over Tommy Dreamer. Then Beulah comes out to my enjoyment. Stands at ringside. She's got her neck brace on because she was piledroven
into the ground. Into vigorously. The mat last time.
Raven hits an even flow DDT on Dreamer. Ends up fighting back on both. And then who comes out?
Luna.
Luna Vachon comes out to a very big pop. And she has very big breasts.
She saves the day.
She scratches Stevie Richards up and down the back. Rakes the back. As they say, Tommy, he grabs Beulah. He's going to give her a DDT, but Luna says, oh no, you got to give her the pile driver and makes this motion. Tommy, in usual fashion, lifts her up, shows her exposed cooter to all four sides, and then plants her in the ring with a pile driver. And then Tommy and Luna suck face in the middle of the ring.
I wrote smooch.
Oh, you wrote smooch. That was much nicer of you. But Luna doesn't smooch. I don't feel like she's a smoocher.
I think she smooched. Yes. It was Philadelphia.
Even though she's like a goth chick with veins on her, she's a hopeless romantic.
She's a smoocher.
That likes to smooch and hold hands in public.
Yeah.
They kind of head to the back as we cut to black. And that is your pay-per-view.
Exit Sandman. That's
not... Yeah, that is not a pay-per-view. It's you pay
for the videotape.
For the videotape, and you can view it as many times as you want.
Mm-hmm. So you don't pay per view, you pay all you can view.
Yeah, there you go. It's like a buffet. So this match for me was a little sloppy, disorganized, but I did love all the high spots. Especially...
And you love all the plot at the end.
I did love that, too. Because it worked its way... It started off pretty strong, and it's a dog collar match, so you know, like... But they outdid themselves multiple times in the match, which I was like, a lot of blood, many tables broken, many weapons used, faces were sucked. Raven and Richards and Tommy feud continues and escalates. We see Luna for the first time. You know who Luna is?
Very familiar.
Yeah, she's a member of the famous Vachon wrestling family, who a lot of her uncles and I think, I'm not sure if it's her father, they were like 70s wrestlers, so... But she was in most recently in the WWF with Bam Bam Bigelow as his main squeeze. She actually comes here with her husband, who we will meet next time.
Wow. So I'm not going to
tell you this. Any thoughts on the match specifically?
A couple of really high flying moves, especially some of the stuff in those tables.
High impact.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I love when hell breaks loose at the end.
Yeah. If you thought hell broke loose on the previous match, more hell broke looser after this match.
It's a far looser hell.
So, what about the card?
It's like when it's like dad in charge.
Yes.
Versus mom exactly. being in charge.
Yeah, exactly.
In hell.
All right. So, what about the card as a whole?
The funny part was that the match that didn't exist.
What? Marty Jannetty?
Yeah, they just made it go away. I think this is funny. They just T-boned right through that.
Yeah.
They hit the fast forward.
They're like, we can't even clip this.
Yeah. And I still can't wrap my head around the two title matches.
Pre the tag match?
The two title matches where two people have to
win. Oh, yeah. Where the champion has the worst.
Where the number two contender gets a bye. I still don't understand how that works.
The champion is at the worst advantage of that.
Yeah, it should have been Shane Douglas versus Cactus Jack.
Yes.
For the honor.
With the Sandman with a bye.
Right. That's how those things usually work.
Yeah, that person was not asked to help with March Madness. Or
start four teams.
Yeah. Work your way up to 16.
The first four.
The first four. The final round of 64.
Yeah. Huh? We start. Welcome to the final week of March Madness. We started with 14. And now we've reached the end.
Of 60. We're at
64 where everybody gets a trophy.
Participation trophy.
Millennial March Madness.
Oh, man. So for me, this card was pretty good from top to bottom. Not entirely all hardcore brawling like the last one, but not entirely pure mat wrestling. Technical thing, which I don't think ECW really is known for anyway.
This was more extreme than any of the other extremeness that we've seen.
Yeah. Still working out the kinks, but still heading in the right direction.
I'd say they took a jump.
Because, not just the hardcore brawling constantly. They did work in some story and other things. Continuation of the Dreamer-Raven feud. Even Mikey and Richards make sense as it stems from last month. They were the first match, so mm-hmm. adding them to that. And Richards is Raven's lackey, so. Continuation of the tension between Shane and Cactus, as they haven't really come to blows just yet, but they're definitely interfering in each other's matches. Sandman, he does seem like an afterthought on this, though.
Yeah.
The champion is basically the third team. It's just so funny. Thank you for not showing Marty Jannetty. And tag teams continue to reign supreme here. Headline the card. Taz, he's re-gimmicked as Taz. But you could see he cut his hair. I mean, he had a dip in, so you know he's cool.
Do you think that match disappeared because of...
reasons?
They thought Chris Benoit was going to be in it, but they just erased Chris Benoit from the world.
No, because it's not on even the home video. Or maybe they knew.
Right.
In 10 years.
Exactly.
Luna Vachon, she debuts. We got blood, guts, sweat, tears. I'm loving Stevie more and more. He's growing on me.
Can't get over the haircut, man. It's disgusting.
Yeah, his feathered mullet. His
feathered
mullet. But he's so goofy. And for like as young as he is or whatever, he's like taking over the show, man. And he like does good mic work. And he's not terrible. He's got charisma. So I enjoy watching him, especially like his gimmick, because he's like a goofy nerd. And then, of course, B.O. McGillicuddy. So you know what's up next?
I do not.
Oh. So next up we have barbed wire, hoodies, and choke slams.
What's that about?
Barbed wire, hoodies, and choke slams. So join us next time as we reopen the Extreme Wrestling Archive.